Okay, everybody, workday is over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
NFL training camps continue to produce for the news cycle, Giglio. Fights continue to be the top story of the day, though. The top story out of camp. We had some scuffles at Panthers camp today. And Matt Rhule, the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, decided, you know what? You got to go run laps. You guys can handle this the way you want to handle this, but understand, if we see you fighting, we're going to make you go run laps. And then you got Dan Campbell, the head coach of the Detroit Lions.
Oh, no.
Because there was another one-on-one fight. We had the Giants with Joe Judge, the head coach, being mad that Daniel Jones, their quarterback, ends up at the bottom of a pile, right?
Yeah, but then he changed his tune today.
He did?
Yes.
I missed this.
Oh, I'll find the quote for you.
Okay, please find the quote for me. Because Dan Campbell, while you're looking up that quote, because I did not see that quote, Dan Campbell, the head coach of the Detroit Lions, who is easily my favorite quote now in all of the NFL. Anytime this guy talks, I want to hear a soundbite from this guy because he is the quintessential football meathead, and I love it. I am not here to make fun of Dan Campbell. I am here to appreciate Dan Campbell. He is a throwback in every sense of the word, and Dan Campbell absolutely loves one-on-one fights in practice.
Yeah, I was fired up. I mean, because they were competing, man. It was good to see both of them, two young bucks, go after it. You know, they were, look, we had a pretty good idea of Amon-Ra, you know, the sun god, what he's capable of. Just when he gets pads on, his aggressiveness, it showed up on tape. Just to know he's got a little, hey, man, I'm not your punching bag. That encouraged me. It really did. And the fact they went, you know, we got them paired up again, and it was a good rep. It was still competitive, but it was a good rep. Nobody backed down from each other, and they got better. They got better from it. So I was happy.
That was Dan Campbell, Detroit Lions head coach. There's a lot of Chuck Amato in Dan Campbell to me. At some point, he's going to say discipline, but you got to remember, Amato, when he was the head coach at NC State, he never had any problems with aggressive plays. Right. They would take penalties, but it was aggressive. It was setting a tone. That's what you wanted to see. Play right to the last breath of the whistle, Giglio. That's football. Put it in my veins. Big fan of it. From an ironic point of view. Meanwhile, Matt Rhule, head coach of the Carolina Panthers, there is a line that can be crossed. As he said today, you can take care of it if you want to, but understand you're going to be running some laps when it's all said and done. Get it out of your system, but there's also going to be some disciplinary action after it. But there's also crossing over in that aggressiveness, as we saw yesterday, where a wide receiver was sent to the hospital, and JT Ibe, the guy who hit a defenseless receiver, ended up being cut by the team. Here's Matt Rhule on a player being carted off the field in the middle of training camp.
I'll probably talk about this once, then I'm going to move on. It's completely unacceptable to do something like that. So there's things, bang-bang plays that happen, and, you know, guys will hit the ground, but you can't tee off on somebody. So that's not what we'll do. It's undisciplined by us, so it can't happen.
Matt, will remain in
the position? I'm done. Talk about it.
He was done talking about it, but again, the Panthers did move on from JT Ibe yesterday after Kirkwood was sent to the hospital, and he's fine, but he ended up with a concussion, although that's relatively speaking, having a concussion is not a great thing. So you see where it's productive and you see where it's counterproductive. I think we can be adults about this. Just dudes being bros, getting hyped for the football season. And these guys are doing something they hadn't been able to do last season. So it's all kind of coming out right now. No big deal. From the silly discussions about fights to a more serious discussion, according to ProFootballTalk.com, the Carolina Panthers have been, as he put it, quietly, Mike Florio at ProFootballTalk.com, quietly keeping an eye on Deshaun Watson, Houston Texans quarterback. You'll remember back in the spring, Deshaun Watson wanted no part of the Houston Texans, and a bunch of teams were attached to trade possibilities. Carolina Panthers were one of them, to the point where reports are coming out that they were willing to just give the Texans what they wanted to get Deshaun Watson. But then there was the matter of 22 civil lawsuits and 10 criminal complaints against Deshaun Watson, and that story evaporated. Deshaun Watson has shown up to Texans training camp, but he's not practicing with the team at all. And Mike Florio, again, in his report today, per a league source, quote, "The Panthers quietly are keeping an eye on Watson. Yes, they traded for Sam Darnold, and they picked up his 22 option. Owner David Tepper, nevertheless, is committed to finding a long-term franchise quarterback. Watson has the skill to be that guy. Tepper, who has made his money buying low and selling high, could be inclined to make a move if Watson's contract cannot be secured at a reasonable amount." So nothing has changed with Deshaun Watson, Julio. He doesn't want to play for the Texans. The question now is whether or not the Texans have finally realized that, and because of the civil lawsuits, they're going to have to accept a deal that they would not have accepted 4 months ago.
It's such a no-win situation for the Texans, right? They kind of need him to play in order for him to have trade value.
Right.
But he, even at this moment, still doesn't want to play for the Texans. Like, he still thinks he has options. I got news for you. You don't have options right now. You were in a position of power when the season ended, and I could understand the Texans at that time with a 25-year-old franchise quarterback saying, we're not going to give him away, right? But now they're in this fairly untenable position because – unless Deshaun Watson goes full Kobe Bryant and says, you cannot suspend me until I am proven guilty in a court of law.
Yeah.
I am going to play. I'm going to go to court every day like Kobe Bryant did during his civil trial in Colorado for sexual assault. I'm going to go to court. I'm going to come to practice and I'm going to come back and I'm going to play again.
Yeah.
And you can't do anything legally to keep me off the field. Unless Deshaun Watson goes full Kobe Bryant, I don't see what his choices are. Now, this is, you really want to get into a mind-bending, heavy Wednesday topic of conversation. Why not? Let's get a little crazy here on the OG. What's the difference between the Panthers potentially trading for Deshaun Watson and the Carolina Hurricanes signing Tony D'Angelo?
There isn't one.
Because it would be, if you're the Panthers right now, right? You're trying to get a player at a cheaper price.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's essentially why you would try to get Deshaun Watson right now?
There is no difference between the Carolina Panthers and the Carolina Hurricanes going out and getting what they feel is a...
perceived value.
Perceived value at the expense of your values that you send to fans. So, for instance, we'll use the Carolina Hurricanes and the Panthers, if you want to go heavy on it.
Yeah.
I got no problems.
Why
here.
Not, man? It's Wednesday.
Let's use Tony D'Angelo and the Carolina Hurricanes. Carolina Hurricanes had which coach?
Oh, which, yeah.
Before
Bill,
Robert
Bill Moore? Peters, yes.
Why is Bill Peters not coaching right now?
He had a problematic past with not only dealing with players, but his own racist issues.
And who was an assistant coach under Bill Peters?
Rod Brindamore.
Who's now the head coach.
Right.
Despite all of those connected dots about how you wanted to move on from that particular thing and this is not what you are about.
Right.
You went and you got a guy in Tony D'Angelo because you felt that the value was worth it and the risk was worth it and you feel that you could change him. So there's a disconnect from what you thought the values were and what you're actually doing, which I'll take this to the Panthers. What was one of the first things that David Tepper did once he actually took over the Carolina Panthers?
Basically tried to scrub Jerry Richardson's fingerprints?
Not just scrub, literally remove Jerry Richardson from Bank of America Stadium.
Sure.
Do we know where that statue is?
It's like next to the Ark.
I don't know.
In the National Archives with Indiana Jones.
Don't look directly into it.
Yeah.
Your face might melt off.
Yeah.
So David Tepper was willing to show you, this ain't me. And the reason why David Tepper has the team in the first place is because why?
Well, the NFL essentially forced Jerry Richardson to sell the team.
Jerry Richardson was under investigation for his own sexual harassment claims.
Not quite as egregious as the Donald Sterling. NBA literally forced him.
They literally forced
him. Yeah, I mean.
And the NFL.
In both cases, they're both people who did bad things and are making a bajazillion dollars.
And you have to remember that Jerry Richardson took less in selling the Panthers from David Tepper
because
he had cash ready to go. It was an unload. Let's move this as quickly as we could because he knew that he had the cash in hand rather than an ownership group that had to finance this particular purchase from the Carolina Panthers. But the point remains, all that context setting aside, the context remains. You, as an organization, tried to remove yourself from the previous regime that had sexual harassment
specific
claims.
To a sexual harassment or sexual assault.
Now, in the case of Deshaun Watson, you're willing to put those values to the side because, oh my goodness, we could get this guy at a perceived value. So in all of this is to say, before anybody gets, you know, all bent out of shape about these particular things, I'm only bringing this up to illustrate the one truism in sports. And really, in all businesses, if you really think about it.
I was going to say, it's probably not limited to
sports. It's not limited to sports. We are willing to put values aside if we feel this person is worth it to the bottom line. We see this in companies. And we're seeing this now with the Carolina Panthers. And we saw this with the Carolina Hurricanes and Tano DeAngelo. Spare me the, is nobody allowed to be given a second chance? Of course people are absolutely owed a second chance. My point is, do you notice who gets the second chances and who doesn't get the second chances? I'll bring it back to the Carolina Panthers to crystallize my point. Yesterday, they cut JT Ebay because he went headhunting on Kirkwood, the wide receiver for the Carolina Panthers. They cut him. eBay, it's important to note, was an undrafted free agent in 2020. He had a second opportunity through, I think, like another pro day at South Carolina. The Panthers took a flyer on him. He's there at camp. They don't need eBay. If this were J.C. Horn, who sent a guy to the hospital with a needless hit, are they cutting J.C. Horn? No, they're not. So it gets back to a real simple thing. Can we get you at this value, and we're willing to put those other values aside? It's not something that I'm trying to... It is not something that I'm trying to say is right or wrong. It's me telling you this is the way the world works. So, does it surprise me that the Carolina Panthers are still interested in Deshaun Watson? No. Just in the same way, it's not surprising that the Carolina Hurricanes were interested in Tony DeAngelo, especially what we know about the ownership, value, and getting the market, taking advantage of the market.
Yeah. The only thing that surprises me is that Deshaun Watson still isn't willing to play for the Texans. Like, what options do you have at this point?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess
like you have to protect your own trade value. If you sit out and do nothing for 4 years, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, and who knows? Maybe
he'll get paid, right?
Maybe he also understands, too, that he might not. Because here's the other thing. I know what you're saying about Kobe Bryant, and he went to trial. You know, he was going to the civil case, and he was still playing basketball.
He was in two courts on the same day, right?
The actual court
and the actual basketball court.
The one thing that I believe is within the collective bargaining agreement with the NFL is that the commissioner can put Deshaun Watson on the commissioner's exempt list.
Yes.
And that would prevent that scenario that you're talking about where Deshaun Watson's like, there's nothing legally you can do to prevent me from getting on the field. Well, based on some previous instances in the NFL, the commissioner can take you off the field if he sees fit. I think that's within his power. So last week, Bob Bowlsby, the commissioner for the Big 12, sent a cease and desist letter to ESPN, you know, who they partner with for television, saying, hey, we need you to stop telling conferences what they should do because it's messing our conference up. Texas and Oklahoma are off to the SEC. He also accused that the American Athletic Conference, that there had been discussions between the American Athletic Conference and ESPN about which teams they should poach from the Big 12 if the Big 12 was to disintegrate because Texas and Oklahoma were off to the SEC. During the AAC media day, poor Mike Oresko, denied such claims, said that while the American Athletic Conference has consulted with its television and business partners for its own issues, he called that accusation from the Big 12, quote, completely unfounded and grossly irresponsible. that the conference would collude with ESPN to discuss realignment issues. Quote, our conference is never strategically aligned or plotted, if you will, with ESPN to influence conference structures. We wouldn't do that. ESPN has never done that, and we would not do it. End quote. But here's the thing, though, Julio. This is very, it's all in the nuance. Do I believe that ESPN went to the American Athletic Conference and said, hey, you know, if the Big 12 is about to implode because Texas and Oklahoma are going to join the SEC, you know what would help you all out? If you added these teams, and then, you know, we could talk about, you know, restructuring the deal, okay? I don't believe that happened, just like in the same way that I wouldn't believe that the American Athletic Conference would contact ESPN, hit them up, and go, hey, so if we added these two teams, what would we do? I do believe that conferences would kind of ping ESPN or their television partner saying, hey, look, just hypothetically speaking, look, man, we all know that realignment's always a possibility. You know, what would happen if XYZ happened? You know, or what? How do you see things going in the near future? It's kind of like networking, right? It's not like you're going and talking to it would be the equivalent of me going to another media company with somebody that I know that works over at that media company, having coffee and just being like, so how are things over there? Yeah, things are fine. How are things with you? I know what, they're good. Hey, you know, like this job might come up. Oh, really? That's interesting. I didn't realize that was a possibility. Oh, yeah, you know, big deal. And you just kind of file it in the back of your head so that when the time does come, you have a better idea of what's going on.
Wouldn't it be irresponsible of Mike Oresko if he didn't?
Yes.
In the subsequent announcement from Oklahoma and Texas leaving the Big 12, like, the Big 12 is not going to exist after Texas and Oklahoma leave.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not.
It's not.
You don't go nuclear on ESPN and think you're going to survive.
No.
That's not a move you make.
It's a last gasp effort. That's
right.
All that is.
So it would be irresponsible of Mike Oresko as the commissioner of the American Athletic, and quite frankly, someone who was with the Big East before and saw his conference obliterated and decimated by the ACC.
I learned my lessons. I got to be ahead
of
the game.
For him not to be progressive. Now, do I think he colluded with ESPN? No.
No.
But do I think after Texas and Oklahoma made it clear their intentions, do I think it would be, it's the right thing for Mike Oresko to do? 100%.
How about this? Let's go back to a conversation you had with a source who used to work at the ACC. Back when Maryland left the ACC for the Big Ten, what'd they tell you about Texas and Oklahoma?
The ACC talked to Texas and Oklahoma because at that time, remember, they were considering going to the Pac-12.
Yes.
So they had, the ACC had reached out and said, hey, if you guys are leaving, you know, you could have a home here.
Yeah.
And they had conversations with Texas and Oklahoma, who at that time decided, you know what, we're going to, got your number, going to keep it on file.
Yep.
But we're going to stay put for now.
I bring this up because the president of Texas recently said, I'm paraphrasing here, but he recently said something to the effect of, well, you know, have you talked to other conferences about this? Was it always the SEC? And he said, no. Essentially, he said no. But the nuance was, you didn't go and talk to other conferences.
They talked to you.
They talked to you. Yeah. It's kind of like with the coaching search, like nobody was ever offered the job. The person who took the job was the only person who was ever offered the job. Well, the reason why that person was offered the job was because you knew they were going to take the job. It's kind of like a marriage proposal. Are you really asking for somebody's hand in marriage if you don't already know the answer?
Maybe. Do you watch The Bachelor?
A different show.
Okay.
That's not the real world, man. What?
When you, out there. When our you, baby boy's all viral now on the Twitters. Give him a little bit of love.
When you proposed to Jess, you knew the answer.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, come on. You knew the answer. Just saying. You knew the answer. That's all I'm saying here with the way these things kind of play out. But that's not to say that you don't talk about those things ahead of time before you actually ask them. And I think that's what's really going on here behind the scenes. Another note from college football that I found interesting. And this is from Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports. Or is it Pete Thamel? I always forget.
I think it's Thamel. But
is it Thamel now?
I think it's T.
Jose Theodore?
Josie.
It changes depending on what season it's in.
Yeah. You know, by the way, my name is not Joe Ovies. It's Jose Ovier. Thank you very much. Let's get it right now. So there was a report from Temel. Quote, after touching base with a few coaches and ADs yesterday, it appears that we'll be getting a 2021 college football COVID testing protocol in the next week or two. Schools, leagues have been meeting about them. Lots of lingering questions with Delta variant spikes around the country. Combine that with the NCAA, the governing body, announcing their recommendations today. Paraphrasing, if you're unvaccinated, they want players tested 3 times a week.
3 times a week, yeah.
If you are vaccinated, you wouldn't get tested unless you're actually showing symptoms. Sounds kind of familiar, right? Gets back to the whole Omaha thing with NC State. Here's my question. Did the conferences learn anything from last year? Are they going to enter into a unified way of how they go about testing and how they go about whether games get played or not? Are they going to take an approach that the NFL is taking where it's, hey, look, As Kelly has jokingly said to me, enough with the carrot. Sounds like people need the stick when it comes to COVID at this point in time. And we've been trying to get people to get vaccinated with the, hey, we'll give you money. Hey, we'll do this. Hey, we won't test you, et cetera, et cetera. Might be getting to the point where college football and what the NFL is doing is, no, we're going to have to now poke you with the stick. And in the case of college football, it would be, hey, you might not be able, you're not going to be able to reschedule these games. Hey, these are going to be forfeits if you end up having positive tests that tick you out.
Nick Saban would vaccinate his players in his sleep if that was presented as an option.
Right. Nick Saban's going to the dorm. Hey, good morning.
He's ether ragging his players. We are not forfeiting a game against Vanderbilt under any circumstance.
You know, Mac Brown showing up to the door going, ding dong, time to get your shot. So,
you know, Mac could sweet talk you into the shot.
That's a good point.
Need the strong arm.
That's a valid point. Now, I really think you guys should do this. You should get this shot. That's a terrible Mac Brown impression. So that's where I think these conferences need to go in the direction of. Here's another question
that requires centralized leadership, which does not exist.
I know. That's me wishful thinking, me being an idealist. I got another question. We still going to have packed stadiums this year? Because 2 months ago or a month ago, it's, all right, full attendance. Let's go, baby. Now, with the way things have been going, I am curious if schools are going to revisit their plans to have full stadiums. Or if they're going to say, hey, if you want to go to a game, that's great, but you might have to prove that you're vaccinated. Like, they can't not have fans' money this season. They need butts and seats.
No, they already have their money from last season.
But they also need people showing up for parking.
Oh,
they
no, also there's
need,
no doubt.
They need people showing up buying stuff. They need butts and seats for a variety of reasons. I know what you're saying about the money.
You can't do that 2 years in a row.
You can't do that 2 years in a row.
They pulled a Wimpy, though. I'll gladly pay you for a hamburger today for next Tuesday.
So how do you handle that? You still need butts and seats, but you also don't want to be a bad spot. So these are all questions as we're less than a month away from the start of the college football season. Wouldn't want to be an administrator right now. I'm only bringing this up because these are really hard decisions with no real answers because I feel like the target's constantly moving. I guess the target's always been moving. The mistake that we made was thinking, all right, everything's going in the right direction. And maybe for a while there it was, but again, moving targets, we end up having to reassess where things are going. Let's go to the Heister Automotive Group hotline. Say hello to Wes Durham of the ACC Network. Wes, I feel like the lessons of Omaha may or may not be getting through to college football in the larger sense as we're about a month away from the start of the season.
Well, we've got the NCAA guidelines, but remember, we had NCAA guidelines last year, and conferences went and adopted even more stringent stuff, right? So remember, we're still waiting to hear what the kind of the final call will be from the medical advisory group for the ACC in particular. We do know that, you know, conferences have already said that if you can't field a team, you forfeit, whatever the case may be. So that should be encouragement enough. But, you know, as we're seeing play out at the next level, I think we talked about this, guys, you know, a while back. The NFL, I mean, we're finally getting the message to the NFL where it seems like most of the teams are going to be beyond 50% by kick of the regular season, if not the preseason. And it's going to be interesting to see how the college game goes, because I know there is a lot of discussion that has gone on at several ACC schools about, you know, that process and who all's in and who all's not in at this point. And you know what? We may have to see an example somewhere early in the season to incentivize everybody else to jump in, I guess.
I'm not jumping on you, Wes, when you say that. I'm jumping on the idea that something has to happen in the football season to incentivize. We just saw it with NC State in baseball.
Joe, I'm with you.
That's funny to me.
Well, no, it shouldn't have to. I mean, that should be enough to take anybody who is hedging and say, wait a second, do I really want to put myself through this? I mean, look, I went to an NFL training camp last Saturday and Sunday. I saw it happen. I mean, I see the what we have to go through to see the practice.
Yeah.
You know, let alone what they have to go through to participate in the practice. And that's why I think, you know, outside of a couple, the Vikings certainly being one, Washington being the other, I think you're seeing a lot of teams kind of move forward pretty quick and pretty deliberate in getting this done. You got a few guys hanging around, Cole Beasley, guys like that. Yeah. But I think across the board, I think you're going to end up seeing, I mean, I'll throw a number out there. The speculation number would probably be 2/3. I think you're going to see 2/3 of most rosters vaccinated by the time we play, if not more.
Wes Durham, ACC Network, joining us here on the OG. That's Joe Ovius. I'm Joe Giglio. Wes, forgive me if I missed this, but and I'm fascinated, obviously, by this COVID conversations that we continue to have a 16 months later.
Right.
How much time have you spent on the ACC Network talking about, like, it's almost like last year was a fever dream having divisionless football. Like, I feel like no one is talking about how awesome that portion of the ACC football season was last year. And now we're just going back to this, oh, yeah, by the way, Clemson's going to beat the heck out of every team they play and show up in Charlotte and play one of the surviving coastal, you know, chaos teams. Like, what am I missing here? Like, shouldn't there be a larger, louder advocate for divisionless football than me? Like, shouldn't Dave Doran or anyone in the Atlantic Division be screaming from the rooftops? Shouldn't Jeff Collins, Mr. 404, shouldn't he be like out there like, hey, hello, what are we doing?
Oh, yeah.
Talk to me, Wes.
Joe,
fire it up over here.
Right. I think what you're talking about is we got to get to a comfort level with a lot of people on this. And I think that one of the reasons you haven't heard more about it is because the coaches just went and did what they did last year. And that's kind of where the model stopped.
Yeah.
We don't know enough about divisionless football. We don't know that it ensures the, you know, the world famous State Duke or Wake Carolina game there in y'all's neck of the woods. I mean, we don't know that automatically guarantees all that stuff. Right.
It guarantees variety, though, is what it guarantees.
It does. And there's and you get a quicker rotation. We all saw the ratios on that last year, right? I mean, we all know what it would mean if we played 8 or 9 conference games in the ACC and didn't have divisions and you had one, and, you know, what the Notre Dame thing would look like, all sorts of stuff, right? We get all that. I think that what's going to be interesting to see is slowly but surely, and Jim Phillips' plan to push football forward, how big an advantage is divisionless football to what we currently have? The thing that I'll tell you guys this, and I haven't talked to him since I saw the show last night. I mean, I saw David Pollack last night say, well, look, Clemson doesn't play anybody, and now all of a sudden they're going to play this schedule, and they'll beat everybody by double figures, and they'll show up and just be crowned the champs of the ACC. Well, not only is that not understanding the depth of the league, it's also speaking to what you were just talking about, that the Coastal is a punching bag for whoever Clemson is. And that's not the case at all this year. I think the Coastal will probably provide a very formidable opponent for Clemson.
Yeah, probably but more so I than do, anybody in the Atlantic, yeah.
Yeah, but I do believe that divisionless football is something we've probably got to look at. I'll be interested to see what the commissioner thinks after he watches a full football season play out. And get some, you know, data on those games and the rotations and things like that, because I do believe it helps maybe his mission statement to push football forward in this league in a way that we need to, I think. And I'm excited to kind of see what Jim's got in mind as he starts to move into that plan.
Wes Durham, ACC Network, joining us here on the OG. You can actually catch Packer and Durham on Buzz Sports Radio from 10 until noon. Wes, brought to you
Bless
by
you.
J.E. Womble and Sons. They don't have it.
Thank you.
You don't need it. Just
right.
like.
By the way, I'm approaching Spartanburg. I'm going to stop off in Spartanburg and see if they've got any late breaking news that we may need to address later this week.
What are you referring to, Wes?
Not while I have water in my mouth, please, Wes.
Yeah, see if any sources in Spartanburg are talking at the Beacon about, you know, people and streaming and all sorts of other nonsense.
Look, as
that's where news breaks, Joe, Spartanburg.
Well, look, man, this isn't new. This is not a new phenomenon, right? I've been doing this long enough, just like you've been doing this long enough, as it relates to college realignment specifically.
Yeah, right.
You know, people will latch on to the things that they want to hear. If it wasn't on social media, it was on message boards. If it wasn't on message boards, it was Greg Doyle who said Notre Dame was joining the ACC. I mean, Greg Doyle's Greg Doyle, he is a longstanding media member who got caught up in expansion realignment fever and said that Notre Dame was going to join the ACC back in, like, what, 2002 or whatever that was?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So this is not – it's not a new phenomenon. The issue that we have now is – I think the issue that we have now is schools are responding to this. It's one thing – it's one thing for you, for me, or anybody else to dunk on some radio guy – in upstate South Carolina. It's one thing for that to happen. Like, do you understand how the media rights deal works? Like, you understand this cannot happen for like 10 years, right? We can do all that sort of stuff. The part that shocked me was that both Clemson and Florida State responded to this dude.
Yeah, I don't know. For the life of me, I don't understand why the school, but I do, but I don't. I mean, There's nothing to it. And Gilio's done the heavy lifting. He's the one that told us there's $400 million out or whatever it is, $390 million to get out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not going to happen. I mean, Florida State doesn't know where $390 million is,
right.
Let alone.
They're broke.
You know.
Where are they going to get the money?
I know why they responded, though.
Why did they respond?
Because you have to remember in those states in particular.
Yeah.
They don't want anything to be perceived as, oh, we need to be with South Carolina. Oh, we need to be with Florida.
Mm.
We need to be in the SEC because that's where all the good teams are. And that's where we need to be.
Yeah.
Like, it's legitimately, they would process that as a recruiting disadvantage.
A recruiting, what Texas found themselves in against Texas A&M?
In the sense that, oh, man, it makes it sound like Clemson and Florida State are desperate. That's what the report makes it sound like. So they're shooting that down officially so that it makes it seem like, you can't dump me. You can't fire me. I break up with you. You didn't dump me.
Right. But let's be honest, it's not happening in Spartanburg.
Well, I would make the argument that it doesn't happen in radio in, like, period.
Joe's down on radio journalism, Wes.
There you go.
It's a 20-year thing that he's been trying to teach.
That's
me.
It, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's nothing – I mean, we can be informed and we can tell you what we think is going to happen, but ultimately breaking news, there's certain places where breaking news comes from. So I think that was the point that I was getting at. Because, again, this is a 20-year experience.
Right.
It's a 20-year experience, and I'm not going to name names, but you and I both know people like this where I get, this radio host in Atlanta said that Carolina's going to have two guys missing in this game against LSU. Because this guy said, I got a source in Greensboro. Okay. So, anyway,
okay.
I have longstanding thoughts on these types of things. Anyway, I just appreciate that Texas is getting dunked on by Texas politicians.
Oh, my gosh.
Now
so
that they're
good.
Leaving for the SEC. where
it's so good and so right.
It's
by the
that's
way.
The thing. It's right, and I guess this gets to a big picture conversation about brands, right? Because we're seeing this with Notre Dame as well, and Notre Dame is going to get a streaming only game when they take on Toledo to start
the season.
Got to
protect that independence, Wes.
That's right.
That Toledo game needs to be protected.
It has to be, right?
And that's one of their traditional rivals,
clearly.
I'm sure, too.
Yes.
So. In a way, what's happening to Texas speaks to a larger problem with our preconceived notions as to what the brands in college football are, right? And and as you said, those Texas politicians were absolutely right when they were saying, so you spend how much money on football and you're leaving for the SEC as this particular brand and you're, what, 3-7 against TCU? Like those types of things. Mm-hmm. So your fans would rather get beat by Alabama. Is that what you're saying? Like that kind of stuff stings because it's true, and it makes me wonder what the SEC is really getting in Texas when they add them. I understand what Oklahoma's doing, but I am curious what they really think they're getting in Texas as they join the SEC.
Well, all right, let me first of all, Texas's brand would work in any league, and we all know it.
We
right?
know that,
just
yes,
because of its size. The interesting part, and I'll say this, and Joe, I think we said this in Charlotte that day when the story came out, and I said, oh, so Texas wants to get back into football and they're going to do it in the SEC West? Well, that makes all the sense in the world. I mean, you know, the Oklahoma, I'll say this, Joe, I'm more intrigued why Oklahoma thinks it's a good move outside of Texas is doing it.
Recruiting.
Because, well, maybe so, but Oklahoma – look at Oklahoma's path, to which they haven't won any of the games, mind you.
True.
But Oklahoma's path into a 4, 8, or 12-team event as a conference champion would basically be hurdleless if they stayed. And now they're going to get into the SEC where, yeah, okay, Lincoln Riley's a damn good football coach, and we all know it, and he's got a really good program and is set to have another one this year.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be honest, there are going to be years where he's going to have as good a team as he had to win the Big 12, and he's going to be an at-large playing on the road in the first week.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but I do think what Texas A&M, and Gillio, I know you pointed this out as it related to Texas and Texas A&M, Texas A&M made the right move by moving to the SEC because in the last 10 years, you've seen them start to get better in recruiting.
No doubt.
And I think that's what Oklahoma understands. We're going to get in the playoff one way or the other, but if we're going to keep up and actually have a chance in these things to win championships, our recruiting also has to keep up. And I think by joining the SEC, they can parlay that into getting better recruits and not having them lost to SEC schools.
Yeah, and I'll take this from Pac, and I think you said it on the show the other day, I think Texas will be more successful in the SEC in basketball than they will in football.
and we know Texas is a basketball school.
Well, but I mean, seriously.
No, I know what you're saying.
Look at Texas's basketball program compared to its football program the last 8 years.
Yep.
Their basketball program's been infinitely more successful.
And they're getting ready to open up a new building, which is going to be gorgeous in Austin.
Yeah.
Wes Durham, sure. ACC Network, brought to you by J.E. Womble and Son. If they don't have it, you don't need it. Wes, man, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Be well. Take care. Thanks.
Let's say hello to Eric McElhain, ACC Network. He's in town. He's actually visited. He visited NC State today. Eric, what's up, man?
Brother, how are you doing, my man? Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no. Thanks for coming on. So you're doing this tour throughout the Triangle. Your first stop was NC State. I know most of the attention is going to North Carolina. I know you're going to be there on Friday, and we'll talk to you on Friday about this. But I understand why North Carolina is getting all the attention. But I feel coming out of ACC kickoff that NC State is starting to get some attention going. Look, solid team, some depth, and if Devin Leary can stay healthy, we might see that next step taken from him.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, we kind of do my order of importance or keys to the season, and quarterback play is number one, you know, being healthy, being consistent, and then this defense and how much experience they have coming back is number two. And what can those guys be from a quarterback's perspective, from a defense perspective? Because we saw so many flashes last year of greatness. It was just unfortunate. It wasn't at the same time. And there wasn't, you know, great defensive play when Leary was there. There wasn't, you know, great quarterback play when the defense was rocking and rolling. So just imagine, you know, what it would look like if we had a little bit of both. And I think there's some real excitement there.
Eric McLean from the ACC Network joining us here on the OG. That's Joe Ovius. I'm Joe Giglio. Eric, when you go to a practice like that and you see guys, I know they're just in shorts and a helmet, but what are some things that you look for?
Yeah, well really from the quarterback perspective, and this will be kind of a, you know, trend for everywhere that we go this year is, you know, just looking at how they react if mistakes are made. You know, are they putting their head down? Are they, you know, complaining about this and that? Are they blaming somebody else? Or are they just kind of owning it and moving forward? You know, I think that's a very big indicator on maturity levels for a quarterback, for, you know, just seeing, okay, is this guy truly going to be able to be a leader for his team? And then just the little things, man. It's so, you know, hard to just read about things or to see things in highlight clips that, you know, if I'm just there with my own two eyes. So looking at tendencies, looking at, you know, work habits for various personnel and players. And then if there's anybody that catches your eye, you know, somebody stands out that maybe, man, I didn't see him on the, you know, the scouting report or from last year. You know, who is this new guy? So it's a lot of fun. It's way different, man, when you can actually go be there live and in person and see it for yourself.
I was going to say, after a year of hosting the huddle from a, you know, like a living room or a playroom, I mean, it's got to be
from a dungeon,
a dungeon,
gosh,
right? You're like in the basement in Charlotte, there,
right?
Without anybody around you, like I'm sure. Just and Katie George was there too today. I'm sure for you it was just great as a former player too, just being back out on the field and being around people.
Man, just to be able to smell grass and see football not on a screen was tremendous. And I'm like a big, you know, vaccinated teddy bear, man. I'm all for it. Let's do this thing and get back to somewhat of normal. And so, yeah, it was great, man. It was great to be there, to be out and about. Same thing with media day, just to see everybody, to be able to talk to these players and coaches, and even in a more relaxed setting. I mean, we filmed for probably 3-4 hours, and it comes on tonight about 7 o'clock on ACC Network. But there was a lot of other downtime that we just got to hang out and, you know, talk with these guys. And it was a lot of fun, man. So I'm very excited, very blessed that we're on this tour. And again, grateful for NC State, you know, kicking us off and all these schools, you know, for the rest of the 13 that we'll start kicking off tomorrow.
Eric McLean joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovius. He's with the ACC Network. He's running through the triangle. We'll leave on this. I think we forget that Dave Doran's been doing this for a long time in the ACC, specifically at NC State. Do you think Dave Doran is underappreciated as a head coach in the ACC?
You know, I think so. I mean, he's a great coach, man. And I think he maybe can rub people the wrong way with, you know, just how blunt he is or how much of just a football guy he is. But that's just who he is as a person. And if you don't like it, he doesn't care. And he's going to coach football and he's going to keep, you know, winning football games. It's funny. Someone asked the question, you know, is there all this pressure this year for NC State? And I said, guys, this is what they do. They win 8-9 football games a year. Those expectations are there. That one-off season that they only had 3 wins due to injury, that's weird. That's not expected. They're not used to that. So it was confusing to me why it's, man, the pressure. How are they going to be able to do it? That pressure is always there. And it's always something from NC State. And, you know, can they take the next step and be back competing with Clemson? We'll still see. But, you know, I think there's no question he's a great football coach.
Eric McLean, ACC Network. All right, man, we'll check in with you tomorrow because you're going to be in Duke, right?
That's right, man. The train keeps on rolling. Excited to see Duke and talk to you guys tomorrow.
Right. I hope you don't get to meet a chupacabra tomorrow, Eric, because I saw that you met Tuffy today. So
we'll be on
just
the lookout.
Be careful, okay?
That's right. No question.
All right, Eric, take it easy. Abby LaBarre, Bally Sports, now joining us on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. Abby, what's up?
Oh, I miss you guys. It's great to hear you.
I know. I miss you as well. What's your coffee intake like?
Oh, I actually have one of those really bougie espresso machines. It's like has the grinder in it. It's got the steamer in it, like full blown all the way.
Look
yeah,
at you.
I know. But to be honest, it was actually a gift and Chris got it for me. And I got really mad at him when he bought it for me because I was like, this is so unnecessary. Why would you spend money on this? And he's like, because you literally go to Starbucks every day. And I have saved so much money using that thing. Like it paid itself off in like 2 months with the amount of like Starbucks I buy
now. But isn't having the Starbucks cup part of the aesthetic?
I mean, when you're talking about somebody like me, sometimes.
Okay.
But just go get the Starbucks cup and then use your own espresso.
Because
still saving money.
That makes sense. I think it was, what was the Showtime show? Was it Weeds? And
I don't know.
Mary Louise Parker, I think, was the actress in that show. And part of the aesthetic was she always had a tumbler filled with coffee. It never left her hand. So some people just need that as part of their look. So you can do that with a Starbucks cup or not. So, and you're probably having
the real. Well, I was going to say the real question is hot or ice.
I always do hot.
Okay.
I have
even
a heart
when it's like 90 degrees out.
I will still have a hot cup of coffee even when it's 90 degrees out.
I fluctuate with the seasons.
Now, if it's a nitro cold brew from Starbucks,
ooh,
I'll do that because that's like having a Guinness without the alcohol.
Talk about espresso intake there. That'll have you jittery all day long.
The thing is, I'm good. Like, it doesn't affect me that way.
Okay, you're one of those.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess caffeine just doesn't necessarily affect me in that particular way. I like the taste of coffee. I'm not necessarily doing it for the purposes of caffeine. I mean, if I wanted caffeine, I'll just drink a Red Bull or something like that. Even that doesn't really do much of anything. Abby Labar, Bally Sports, joining us here on the OG. All right, it's been a week since the start of free agency in the NHL, and the Carolina Hurricanes changed over, a good third of their roster. The core's still there, and there's been some fan favorites that have moved on, obviously the big one being Alex Nedeljkovic and Net. But ultimately, the core's still there. What was your takeaway of this week of free agency?
Yeah, I've spent the last week just kind of unpacking it all, right? Because the fan favorites are some of our favorites as well. We get attached to these players, especially guys like Brock Magin, who bring that energy and excitement to the locker room and to the media. And, we all loved Ned as well. But, hey, it happens with every single team. I think like everyone else, I was a little surprised with some of the moves that happened, especially considering the fact that this is a cup contending window right now for the Canes. And so you have to take some risks. And, the not re-signing Dougie Hamilton for the price that he was asking, I understand it from one side. There's still questions I think a lot of fans have. And that's where I kind of go back and look at, all right, well, how long do the Canes have to win a cup? And what's the risk factor with paying some guys some money that, you're going to need on your roster to bring home a Stanley Cup? But look, I'm not Don Waddell. I'm not a general manager of a hockey club. Those guys are the experts. And Don Waddell has a track record of, doing what he's been able to do the last few seasons. And this team has exceeded expectations and surprised us. And I think having Rod Brind'Amour at the helm of it all, he can bring really anybody into that locker room and kind of create that culture and mold that we expect him to do, because everyone has respect for him and they're going to play hard for him. And look, we talked to Brendan Smith this morning and Josh Levo, and both guys, great personalities, great attitude of looking forward to being a part of the community. And so, as we've talked to each and every one of these players throughout the last week, there's a lot of positives to come out of this for sure.
Abby Labar, Bally Sports, joining us here on the OG. All right, Abby, the one piece of business that still seems to be out there is the contract for Andrei Svechnikov, who's a restricted free agent. When do we anticipate something moving on that front now that there's some money freed up by Dougie Hamilton's exit as well?
God, it's so funny. I feel like we talked about this at the beginning of the summer, and me and Ovius were like, oh yeah, this is going to be the first deal to get done, right? Like, who wouldn't think that? So I know. I think the one thing that the Canes still need, or I'm hoping they'll go out and look for or get, is I still think there's a spot as far as from a depth forward position goes. I think they could still go out and get a good guy to help out in a forward spot, because there's a couple openings specifically on a third or fourth line winger where you could bring up a guy like Jack Drury or Seth Jarvis, some of those younger guys in the system. But again, you're going back to you're contending for a cup right now. And so is it better to go out and sign a veteran guy? I don't know. So I'm wondering if, and this is all speculation from my standpoint and just kind of reading about everything that's been going on the last week or so, is, are they trying to figure out, okay, let's get this deal done for Svechnikov and then see how much money we have left to hopefully go out and bring somebody else, one more good player in. So I don't know. I mean, you would think it would have been done by now, but there was a lot of things we all thought were going to happen this offseason. And, you know, some things changed and there were some surprises. So I would hope it would be soon, because all they've talked about is trying to get him, you know, practicing and ready to go for next season. And you would think he wouldn't want to be dealing with the pressure of this either.
Abby Labar, Bally Sports, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovius. She is on the Heister Automotive Group hotline. All right, so professional question. When you get used to a core group of players and it just kind of rolls off the tongue, how much time are you going to spend on the new roster so like it doesn't seem so foreign to you?
So the names are actually not bad. They really aren't. You got Josh Levo, Derek Steppen, Brendan Smith, Ethan Bear. Those are all pretty simple.
Give me an Antti Raanta. Come on.
Okay, Antti Raanta. I'm still working on it, guys. It's the spelling. It's the spelling for me. It's like I'm on Twitter and I'm like, Levo. Okay, I before E, except after C, except no, it's E before I. It's the spellings that get me when I'm typing these tweets so fast. The names, those will come, but yeah, it's I like put together my own little depth chart actually yesterday, because I'm like, all right, who's going to slide in where? And I was like kind of saying the names out loud to myself. I'm like, these aren't that bad. We can get down with this.
Abby Labar, Bally Sports. Yeah, look, I'll admit, I still don't know how to spell Krzyzewski. And he's now getting ready to retire at Duke. So
You had plenty of time for that.
I've had plenty of time.
You got Niederreiter and Svechnikov. Those are all... Nedeljkovic. I just learned how to spell Nedeljkovic. So much for that. But hey.
All right, Abby, go make some espresso.
I will. I need more.
Yeah.
It's time for Rant 2.
Acapella the news.
Well, boys, yesterday we did some T-Pain. I'm in love with the Clippers. We had some Back That Wince up on Monday, so it's a theme this week, I guess, unbeknownst to me. Carmelo Anthony joins the Lakers, and, you know, this is a good opportunity for him to get some really, really big rings. Drake break is over, obvious.
Really big team, about to get some really big rings. Melo been searching for those things, finally joining with the king. Finally joining with the king. Manny been searching for those things, about to get some really big rings. Cause I got a really big team. Man, what a time to be alive. KD and his versus me and mine. Are we talking teams? Are we talking dreams? Yeah, I'm switching sides, hanging with LB. Look at the roster. Look what it cost ya. I know my role now. I'm not an imposter. This is my best shot. Can't throw it away now.
Get it, Giglio?
Been chasing this thing since back in 03. Still not broken through how. But look at our crew, wow. Just how good is the brow? Just look at our guys. Now I realize that we're trending up down. Just like that banana boat. Let's see if the squad floats. Stay out of that play-in. Listen what I'm saying. Cause I got a really big team. About to get some really
Are we back on the Drake break? Are we?
Let's give it another month.
Okay.
Let's give it another
month. It's like 30 days. It's like our window of
The only saving grace is that I actually like that song.
Ah, good.
That's the only saving grace. I actually like that song.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m. And you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.